You're listening to Radio Hangar, where the aviation conversation never stops. This is the Hangar, I'm Taildragger. And today, friends, we are talking about curves, not the kind on an approach plate. I'm talking about the most gorgeous set of lines ever wrapped around four radial engines and a pressurized fuselage. I'm talking about the Lockheed Constellation, the Connie. And if you've ever seen one in person, you know exactly what I mean. There is no airplane, before or since, that looks like it was born to fly the way a Constellation does. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo, private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. Now, pull up a chair because the story of how the Constellation came to be is almost as beautiful as the airplane itself. And it starts, like a lot of great aviation stories, with a man who was equal parts genius and madman. Howard Hughes, in 1939, Hughes owned a controlling stake in Trans World Airlines, or TWA, and he had a problem. His airline was flying Douglas DC-3s, same as everybody else. He wanted something that would put TWA so far ahead of the competition that Pan Am and American and United would be eating his contrails for a decade. So he picked up the phone and called Lockheed. And not just anyone at Lockheed, he got Kelly Johnson. Now, if that name doesn't ring a bell, it should. Clarence Kelly Johnson was the kind of engineer who comes along maybe once a century. This is the man who would later build the P-80, the U-2, the SR-71 Blackbird. He ran what became the legendary Skunk Works. And in 1939, Howard Hughes basically said to him, "I want you to build me the fastest, most advanced airliner in the world." And Kelly Johnson said, "All right." The specifications Hughes laid out were ambitious. Even by today's standards, he wanted an airplane that could carry at least 40 passengers. He wanted it pressurized, which in 1939 was practically science fiction for a commercial transport. He wanted transatlantic range, and he wanted speed, real speed. Not the lumbering pace of the DC-3 at 170 miles an hour. He wanted something that could cruise above 300. Now here's where it gets interesting. Johnson and his team didn't just draw up a bigger DC-3, they started from a blank sheet, and what they created was revolutionary. That fuselage, that long, sinuous, dolphin-shaped fuselage, people always ask why the Constellation had that distinctive curve, that gentle arc from nose to tail. Well, there are a couple of reasons. The curvature helped with pressurization. A smoothly curved structure handles internal pressure loads better than a straight tube with sharp transitions. But there was also a practical problem. They were hanging four of the biggest, most powerful radial engines available on those wings. The Wright R3350 duplex Cyclone 18 cylinders, 2200 horsepower each in the early models. Those engines swung massive propellers and the fuselage had to clear those prop arcs. The solution was elegant. Instead of just jacking up the nose gear to tilt the whole airplane, Johnson curved the fuselage itself. The nose sat high, the tail sat low, and the whole thing looked like a leaping dolphin. And then there was the tail. Three vertical stabilizers instead of one. Why three? Because a single tail tall enough to provide the necessary directional control would have made the airplane too tall to fit in existing hangars. Three shorter fins solved the problem and gave the Constellation a silhouette that you could identify from 5 miles away. The prototype first flew on January 9, 1943, but here's the thing. By then, America was deep in the Second World War. The Army Air Forces took one look at the Constellation and said, "We'll take all of them, thank you very much." The airliner became the C-69 military transport. Hughes and TWA would have to wait. But Hughes, being Hughes, he wasn't exactly patient. And this brings us to one of my favorite stories in all of aviation. Right around this time of year, April 17, 1944, Hughes climbed into the left seat of a C-69 at Lockheed's Burbank plant. In the right seat was Jack Fry, president of TWA. They had a full load of airline executives and military brass in the back. And they flew that airplane from Burbank, California to Washington, D.C. in 6 hours and 57 minutes. 6 hours and 57 minutes, coast to coast, in 1944. That was a transcontinental speed record for a transport aircraft, and it stood for a long time. The airplane touched down at National Airport, and when those engines wound down, everybody who saw it knew that commercial aviation had just changed forever. After the war ended, TWA put the Constellation into service, and the golden age of propeller-driven air travel began in earnest. The first models, the L049, were basically converted military transports. But Lockheed kept improving the design. The L649 brought more powerful engines and better range. The L749 could cross the Atlantic with a fuel stop in Newfoundland or Shannon, Ireland. But the real masterpiece was the L1049 Super Constellation, which appeared in 1951. the Super Connie 18 feet longer than the original, powered by Wright R3350 turbo compound engines that squeezed an extra 300 horsepower out of each power section by recovering energy from the exhaust. 2,800 horsepower per engine. These were the most complex piston engines ever put into mass production, and they were magnificent and temperamental. Oh, were they temperamental? There's an old joke among Connie pilots. They called the Constellation the world's best three-engine airplane, because with four R3350s, the odds of all four running happily at the same time were, well, let's just say pilots earned their money. Those turbocompound engines had power recovery turbines that channeled exhaust energy back into the crankshaft through fluid couplings. The engineering was brilliant. The reliability was at times terrifying. Engine fires were not uncommon, swallowed valves, thrown rods. A Connie captain once told me years ago at Oshkosh, he said, "Tail dragger, you never really relaxed in the Connie. You just had varying degrees of tension." And he said it with a grin on his face a mile wide because he loved every minute of it. And that was the thing about the Constellation. The people who flew her loved her. Pilots loved the way she handled. For a big airplane, 73,000 pounds empty on the Super Connie, she was responsive. She had hydraulically boosted controls, and in the air she moved like something half her size. Passengers loved the pressurized cabin, the big round windows, the feeling that they were aboard something special, and the ground crews, well, the ground crews had a complicated relationship. They loved the airplane, they cursed the engines, that was the deal. The Constellation flew the world's most glamorous routes, TWA's Transatlantic Service, Pan Am's Globe Circling Routes, Air France over the South Atlantic, Qantas across the Pacific, KLM Royal Dutch Airlines connected Amsterdam to the far corners of the earth in Connies, Eastern Airlines flew them up and down the eastern seaboard. When you boarded a Constellation in the 1950s, you dressed up, you wore a suit, the stewardess brought you a real meal on real china, the captain came back to the cabin to say hello. Flying was an event, not a chore. The military loved the Constellation too. The Navy and Air Force flew them as the C-121 and the EC-121 Warning Star, which was an early airborne early warning aircraft. Packed full of radar equipment, these Connies patrolled the coastlines of North America, watching for Soviet bombers during the Cold War. Some of them flew with those massive radar domes on top and bottom of the fuselage, and they still looked elegant.
Lockheed made one final version, the L-1649 Starliner. Introduced in 1957, it had entirely new, thinner wings with more fuel capacity. It could fly nonstop from New York to Paris or New York to London against the prevailing headwinds. It was the ultimate expression of the piston engine airliner, the absolute pinnacle of propeller-driven commercial aviation, and it arrived about 2 years too late because in 1958, the de Havilland Comet IV and the Boeing 707 entered service. The jet age had arrived, and just like that, the most beautiful airliner ever built was obsolete. It's one of aviation's great tragedies in a way. The Starliner was perfection, and it was perfection at exactly the wrong moment in history. Within a few years, the major airlines retired their Constellations. Some went to cargo operators, some went to smaller airlines in South America and the Caribbean, some went to the desert boneyards, and some simply disappeared. But the Constellation never really left the hearts of the people who knew her, and today there are dedicated groups working to keep these airplanes alive. The most famous flying example is the Super Constellation flown by the Super Constellation Flyers Association based in Switzerland. They operate a beautiful L-1049 and fly it at air shows across Europe. In the United States, there are restoration projects happening at several locations. The National Airline History Museum in Kansas City has a Connie. The Mid-Atlantic Air Museum in Reading, Pennsylvania, has been working on restoring one for years. These are labors of love, because there is nothing easy or cheap about keeping a 70-year-old airplane with four 3550 engines alive. But people do it, because some airplanes are worth saving. And the Constellation is one of those airplanes.
I've been lucky enough to walk through a couple of Connies over the years, and I'll tell you something. When you step inside that curved fuselage, and you look down the length of the cabin, and you see those oval windows with their thick glass, and you smell that particular mixture of old hydraulic fluid and leather and aviation history, something happens. You feel it in your chest. This airplane was designed by people who cared about beauty. Kelly Johnson could have drawn a straight tube with a single tail, and it would have worked just fine. But he didn't. He drew something that looked alive, something that looked like it wanted to fly even when it was sitting still on the ramp. There are plenty of airplanes that were important. There are plenty that were revolutionary. But the Lockheed Constellation was both of those things and beautiful besides. In my 50-odd years around airplanes, I have never seen a machine that stirs the soul quite the way a Connie does. If you ever get the chance to see one, take it. If you ever get the chance to hear those four round engines turning, stand there and listen. Close your eyes. That sound is the sound of a time when we built things to be gorgeous, not just efficient. All right, friends, that's our time today. Today's stories drew from the good folks at the Lockheed Martin Archives, the Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum, and some firsthand accounts documented by the Super Constellation Flyers Association. As always, Radio Hangar is AI-generated content created by people who live and breathe aviation. You can find more of our shows and full source notes at radiohangar.com. I'm Tail Dragger. Go find yourself a constellation to look at. You won't regret it. Radio Hangar, clear skies and tailwinds.